Okay, welcome everyone to the Arizona State Hospital Independent Oversight Committee. Today is February 17th, 2022. It is 6:02 p.m. And I want to welcome everyone. See? So before we begin, do we have anyone that needs to disclose a conflict of interest? Okay, none being heard. Let's move on. Has everyone on the committee been able to review and approve the meeting minutes?
Yes.
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 Okay. Do I hear a motion?
Yes.
And a second?
I second.
This is Dee. Yep, go ahead.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
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 The minutes are passed. Next, let's go ahead and get an update from ADOA.
Good evening. I do not have any updates for the group tonight. I guess the only update I would have is that I'm not sure confidentiality agreements with Ash and the documents that are being forwarded around in the drive and what we're getting on a monthly basis, just making sure that confidentiality agreements are signed. So I'm going to be scrubbing our drive just to make sure that we have a signed agreement for the group, just to make sure we're in compliance. Okay. Other than that, I do not have any updates. Is there any questions that I could answer or concerns that I can address for the group?
Okay, so you mentioned that there's a concern on the confidentiality and the drive. Is it there a concern that we haven't signed them, or is there a concern that people that haven't signed them are in the drive, or what is the concern?
The concern is that we just may not have a copy on file. That's all.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's just more of a formality. Okay. And it's probably a formality on my end in regards to making sure that we have the necessary form signed for the group.
Okay. Well, thank you, Larry. And Dr. Potts, do you have an update? Sorry I missed your meeting yesterday. I thought it was today at noon. I was going to join and it was already done.
No, good. Yeah, you didn't miss much. I'm Dr. Jack Potts. I'm the Central Arizona Chair. Thank you for inviting me. I only have a few minutes to stay. A couple updates. One, there is a Senate bill, as you well know, 1444. I'm sure you'll talk later about it, but there tonight we're going to see if the Arizona Psychiatric Society will support that bill. I'm pretty sure they will. I've already proposed it to them, so we have a lobbyist. We're going to put in some support for that. And there's some other ones obviously out there. Question for you and your committee: what do you think it's appropriate for the IOC to actively or to support or sign in as a committee on proposed legislation?
I usually, when I go and go onto the portal, I sign in personally because I think you have to be registered as a lobbyist to sign in for a committee or group. And
well, I've been a registered lobbyist for too many decades, pro bono for the Psychiatric Society. But I'm wondering, it's an interesting question, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Mr. Allen, do you have any thoughts on that?
No, I don't. That's an interesting question. I don't see why you couldn't sign in as an IOC group or a committee.
1444 specifically addresses your committee, you know, an individual signing in, but it's an interesting thing. Anyway, we gotta look at that because we don't want to ruin, you know, any potential role either. But okay, otherwise, we're going to be changing our meeting time to going back to in public meetings with Zoom availability. We'll be doing that. We used to do it at 5:15 on Wednesdays, the third Wednesday. So we'll be doing that. We did a, Joy Green and I did a couple site visits within the last week. So it's good to get out again. We haven't done enough. And we're still exploring some issues we have with the UPC. We think they haven't been as transparent as they should be regarding some of the bookkeeping paperwork regarding civil commitment in Title 36 court-ordered evaluations. We found them making some major mistakes which violate people's rights. Any questions for me as a from the Central Arizona IOC?
I know there are a lot of bills going on, and I was down, I think, yesterday talking about some that were relating to the IOC and trying to give more statutory language to our committees. And I think that it seemed favorable. It seemed like a lot of the things that we were asking for seems like they'll be accepted. So,
well, if you have, maybe you could let me know, but I'm familiar with a few, and I think it's good to keep each other apprised of this. I talked to Matt Moody, who is a chairman of the chairperson of the MHA, as you know, and I told him about the 1444. I don't think he was aware of it, and I told him some others. But I think if we can keep all of us in the loop, because there's a couple,
we'll,
as you
we'll
know.
We'll send it out, because I think Carly, who's on MHA, and we are, we did discuss a lot of the bills and
okay,
who's supporting what and who's opposed to what. But well, I can send it out to a larger group.
It doesn't hurt, because I have, you know, I'm on the legislative committee for the Psychiatric Society, and we have a paid lobbyist.
Okay.
And we often get the Medical Association with us too. So we may be able to pull in some other heavier hitters. Just a thought. We know we're looking at the ones about this transfer of ASH to Access. I think that my guess
that's
it won't
not gonna,
go through.
That's not going to happen this year.
No, but it's a, in my committee, we talked about it as a shot across the bow, sort of saying, hey, pay attention now. Anyway, I'm available. I'll stick around for a while, and you have my email. If any of your committee members ever have any questions, or if I can be of any assistance with my expertise, I'd be glad to do so. And I thank you for letting me join.
I think there is some interesting information that Ash has sent back to us, which I'll share in a moment. Let's see. Review of action items. Let me find my action items real quick. So as far as pet therapy goes, they did start pet therapy on forensic. You can see that it took a while, but at least now they have someone that's willing to go on the forensic campus along with the civil campus, and they find that that's going really well. Patients like interacting with the animals. The second thing, which is really positive, is it's been very difficult with this asynchronous communication with the ASH administration, since they don't attend our meetings, to talk about an issue, wait a month, send the information, get it back, and by that time, the reports are all off the portal. What they did, and I have to hand it to them, they set up a Google Shared Drive where they did a test run where they put some files up to see if I could get access, and I could. So they may start putting files up there, and anyone in our IOC committee can go up and look at the records. If someone leaves the committee, then they'll remove their access. But in that manner, they'll be able to leave up 6 to 9 months. It won't drop off after 60 days, which is really good, and I'm very glad that
that's
done
a big
that.
Step. That's good.
Yeah. And the other thing is, as far as the 12-hour shifts, if I can share, I will share something that I found it was interesting. They did send information. You know, we were unhappy with, let me see which window I'm sharing. Okay. We were unhappy with their response last month with staffing. So what they sent us, which I think is helpful, is they sent us the nursing staffing acuity. So they base how many people should be on a unit based on how sick patients are, or how symptomatic they are on that unit for that day. So what I'm showing here, if you can see it, this was for this one day in January, and you can see per unit what the acuity was, what the actual was, what the difference was. This is not HIPAA protected information. This is just staffing. And over here on the right, you can see the trend chart. What this shows is the yellow dashed line is what the optimal, that's what, where they want to be in staffing. And as you can tell, they haven't achieved that on days. They seem to be better here and there on second shift. And then NOCs, I'm not sure what that means, nights and weekends, or I don't know what NOC means. I didn't ask, but
NOC means nights, yeah.
Okay. So nights and second shift to second, nights is overnight, seem to have better staffing than days. The thing that concerns me here is most of the programming happens during the day. So if you're short staff on your primary time of programming, I can, you know, to me that's a little problematic. But I was very appreciative of them providing us the actual numbers, which is what we were looking for. Any questions from the committee on this? I think it was very helpful. And Kay, I'm not sure if you can see it. You should have gotten a handout so you have it on the unit for yourself.
I got a copy of it.
Okay, thank you.
I don't have it in front of me right now.
Okay. Any other discussion from committee members?
Well, one wonders, this is Dr. Potts, one wonders about the staffing looking like it's the same level they require. 24/7 almost, you know, so, you know, wonder if you need that in the evening or nighttime, and wonder if it could be supplanted during the day. I mean, just interesting thought. I haven't looked, I just looked at it now. I think it's nice they shared it, and it's actually quite valuable, especially if you can get a synthesis of the month, for example. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's great.
Okay. So I thought that was helpful information. Let me go back to the other stuff. Let's see. Resolution group again. We voiced a concern to see if having patients go to resolution group, if that could potentially violate HIPAA, because they're encouraged to share their event that got them to ASH forensic. And again, like they said, HIPAA, an individual's criminal history is not protected health information.
That was ASH's response, but from my understanding of talking to patients, the hospital actually asks them about their mental health history as well as like their diagnosis. So the hospital isn't stating their diagnosis or their history, they're making the patient state it. So I don't know if that's a fine line in the law where, you know, ASH isn't actually divulging that information, but they're kind of forcing the patients to do so.
That is interesting.
The question I would ask then is, do they give people a sheet regarding their rights prior to entering that group? Because some of the information, in fact, might be damaging because it could be their Fifth Amendment rights. So maybe there's an interesting question. Do they have an information sheet about the purpose of the group and what they do or do not have to divulge? And that goes to the HIPAA question, too.
From what we've been told is that if they don't divulge and don't participate, then they don't progress. So, I mean, it's...
Well, but again, it's hard to be punished for upholding your own rights, and so that would... I've had a problem with resolution group for many decades in that some people truly don't believe they did anything wrong because they're so psychotic. They knew they were right at the time. And for them to try and switch that just betrays their defense mechanisms that can be damaging to their own individual sense of self. So I think that it's not a fair thing to do in all cases. And I've seen some old folks who, you know, that they couldn't live with themselves knowing they may have killed someone who didn't deserve to die. So I've had a problem with resolution groups. So, yeah, so it may be one of the ways of sort of protecting some people and then challenging the necessity of completing resolution group prior to progressing, because I think that's problematic in an individualized therapy world. Just my thoughts, folks, as a forensic shrink.
Well, Dr. Potts, this is Dee, sorry. So not only are do they have to do it if they want to progress, but it's also required of them to do it in to complete resolution group, even though there's no resolution group requirement to progress. Do you understand what I'm saying? How convoluted that is.
And I've been aware of that for decades since they've been doing that, and I've had problems with it, and I've testified to that point at the PSRB. I think it's not fair, and I think it goes against what the Supreme Court says are mandated as individualized treatment program. And this is a mass program pushed on everyone. And the courts, and Chuck, I think you know this, the courts very much say you have a right to individualized treatment. And that's pretty, so so my sense is that's truly a human rights issue here. So I'm aware of that and concerned, but I'm not on your committee, but I'd be glad to look at that with anyone if you wish as a resource.
Maybe we'll have an opportunity.
So why does it continue? Yeah. I mean,
but maybe when the PSRB moves over to Superior Court, and hopefully that may be an opportunity ahead of time to have that discussion. And we'd love to rely on your expertise to help them understand clinically how that can be damaging and how it violates not doing individual treatment, but group massive, forced. They tell us it's not required, but it is required. So it's hard.
It's tantamount to the Uyghurs going to re-education group in China, yeah. Period.
Yeah.
So, if you wait until Superior Court steps in, that's still more than a year away. That seems to me like a too long of a time frame. So, are you suggesting we do that sooner, Lori?
Well, I'm just being practical. If the PSRB has not, you know, we've asked before that if it's really not required by the hospital, that the PSRB, that they tell the PSRB it's not required. And the hospital said it's not their jurisdiction to tell the PSRB what to do, right? I said, but they do make recommendations. I mean, we could try, but I don't know if we'd get anywhere with the current PSRB.
Well, it seems to me that Dr. Clark, who used to be the chairperson of the PSRB, who is no longer in that position, was the one who was so focused on that. Is it possible that the judge who is now overseeing that position could be contacted? Would that be something appropriate for us?
I didn't know Dr. Clark stepped down. I didn't think so.
I don't think that has occurred yet either.
No. I thought he was supposed to be out of there in 2 months from when it was supposed to start. And that was according to what I remember reading. And then there was supposed to be a judge placed in that position. And then at the end of the 2 years, then the PSRB was going to dissolve, but he was going to be removed from that position. So I guess I'm wrong, but
to my understanding, Lori and the committee members, that is not accurate. It is my understanding as of recently that Dr. Clark still is the chairperson of that committee and that they have not moved forward with an appointment of a judge. On this issue, I would recommend if you to maybe look at a little deeper and maybe start with little incremental steps saying, hey, do they have a right not to participate and that the patients be given a list of the rights, just like they're given when they go in. Some jails give them the rights when they get arrested regarding the right to hearings and bond and bail and stuff. So maybe a handout, but it's something to think about. But I agree with you, Lori, the best thing is to wait. It's been going on for a long time. It's a culture that's going to be hard to break, but it is a concern.
So could I suggest that maybe we have a subcommittee that work on this and come back to the committee and make some recommendations?
I can help out with that on the paper side.
Oh, good. Thank you, Kay. Okay, so I motion that we have a subcommittee look into this as far as patient right being given the right to participate or not participate in individual treatment, and is it doesn't it violate the individual treatment? So maybe Jack, I'll lean on you as well.
I will be glad to be an ad hoc member of that committee. Since I have no voting rights, I'll be glad to assist, and I can also talk to some lawyers and judge friends, et cetera, and help
okay.
with whomever is the chair or co-chair. Just get in touch with me. Thank
okay.
you.
I would be willing to help out on a committee like that too. This is Alice.
Okay.
It's a pretty important topic for me too and what I do.
Okay.
That's what I, if you need another person.
Okay, we have okay. Lori motion, so I'll second Natalie.
Okay. Thank you, Natalie.
I'll note you guys down too.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay, so moved. As long as we keep it, oh, Chuck, you're not a member yet. You can't talk. Until, I'm going to mute you. No, until public comment. The other thing, we asked Ash to reconsider getting those tablets in Dabo, and they are now considering it. They're reviewing and considering getting the tablets, which I think in my opinion, and from what Dee has shown, and I know they're doing it in the prisons and jails, and it helps with lots of things because you can program them locked down so you can control what people can do, but I think it helps with boredom and violence and all kinds of stuff. So that's nice.
I love that idea. Excuse me real quick. I think it's fantastic, Dee. I read through that. Do we need to secure funding and everything for that, or?
I think they first.
Well, I think we could.
Yeah, ask. If they say yes, they're now interested, then we go after funding. I don't want to spend time going to funders again like I did with education and then it get dropped.
Okay.
Well, that could, wouldn't that fall under education in some way, Lori, since they do have a lot of educational things? They, since they haven't really done anything with the education portion of stuff, could that money possibly go back to the donors and say, hey, we would like to use it for this, which includes education? Would that be something that would be viable if and when that's needed?
I could go back to the donor. I found the donor in the foundation that was willing to do it. I'd have to reapproach them, but I don't want to do it until they say they're interested.
No, absolutely. I get that. It was just a thought that I had. My mind goes pretty quickly down the road, so. But no, I think that there's a lot of educational opportunities within that system, and so therefore maybe it could still qualify. Thank you.
Okay.
If I may, Lori, I have to excuse myself. I want to suggest that the state hospital has more than enough money. Let them figure it out and then jump in if they don't. But, you know, they're obviously saving money on staffing, as you just showed. Anyway, thank you for having me. I'll wait to hear from the chairperson of that subcommittee if they wish my input.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. We asked if there had been any changes to the rules accessing the library due to behavior. They said no recent changes to the patient privileges and access to the library and other services on forensic. Patients may not be appropriate for vocational training if they do not currently have a clinical capacity to safely participate. And that we asked about that based on a visit. The other, Ash, wants to know if privileges were lost in this instant and wanted to know about it. I did give them information. They sent us the package on therapeutic vocational training program consent form. And as far as, let's see, we have a couple other things that they did send us. We were concerned with one patient that spoke of his concern of safety based on the lack of or the low staffing. And then it was reported that it was brought up and they were made to feel like they were the cause of no one going out on the mall anymore. So it almost felt like they were being retaliated against because they went to the IOC and stated that they felt unsafe. So we have asked for records, nursing therapeutic records. They have provided very detailed information. So it's not me, just me. I sent it to Alice and Alice is reviewing them, but I think it's pretty detailed. So we'll review that and get back to the group at the next meeting.
Okay, I just one thing about that, this mm-hmm. is Alice. This seems to be a problem in psychiatric care and higher acuity, and low acuity across the board. I have the feeling in the state of Arizona, if not maybe the whole of the U.S., I don't know. But unfortunately, that safety issue, it's not even just patients, it's staff. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Laura, I'd love to talk to you about that. That's a whole nother thing that personally I would love to see maybe some sort of reworking of the system because what used to fit now after COVID, I just don't feel like it fits anymore. So just a comment about that safety issue.
And I can say as someone that reads through the reports, but others on the committee are going to be able to on the Google Drive, very often, staff are hit, along with other patients, by people acting out.
Yes, so broken bones. Yeah. Somebody I know got their face, actually a broken jawbone, a broken nose. We get it pretty good too as staff. So,
The other issue was patients getting mail in a timely manner. They say that there are no delays in the mail distribution at the hospital. I talked today and asked about that again, and they said that they have a mail person that goes to the post office to get the mail, and they have had no delays. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't delays in the regular mail system that we've all experienced. So if something's supposed to arrive on, let's say, the 15th, and it doesn't, it may not necessarily be the hospital mail system that's delaying it. It may not have gotten to Phoenix, to the post office box or wherever it goes to in sufficient time. And the hospital.
Hey, Lori. Mm-hmm. This is Dee. Sorry to interrupt, but Bobby and I have actually been dating the backs of our letters when we send them. It really appears that the problem isn't the mail person getting them to the mail, to the, you know, the post office. It's the unit getting the mail to the mail person. And I have documentation that proves how long some of it's taken, as much as 2 weeks. No, he's been on 4 or 5 units, you know, now, and this spans back several years that we've been doing this.
It's okay.
Just an FYI.
Can you say if you're aware of mail delays on your unit or others?
Yeah, it seems like I have heard from other patients that mail is taking at least a week, sometimes two, longer than standard mail is what I've been told.
Okay. So do we want to provide feedback to the hospital administration that the patients, more than one, have observed a longer delay in them getting their mail?
And again, I think it's going from the unit to the mail person and not from the mail person to the USPS. So there's, I think, a different perspective on what their answer has been to you.
Okay. Okay, we can, I will motion that we ask and clarify that it is getting the mail from the unit to the mail person, or getting it from the mail person to the unit. That's the time we're interested in. Not
correct.
From the U.S. mail service to the mail person. Okay. So let us re-ask
correct.
That. Do I have a second?
A second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone
aye.
Opposed? Okay. The next thing was on that incident where a patient died and they were left for the medical examiner. What happened, and it was something that they hadn't seen before. Generally, when someone dies, in the past, except for one or two instances, they're not pronounced dead on the ash grounds. This is the best of my knowledge. They usually are taken away to another hospital, like Valley Wise, and then pronounced dead. In this situation, the person was pronounced dead at the hospital, and then they called, they contacted the coroner to request an autopsy, and the coroner's office declined jurisdiction for many hours, which required the hospital to notify a funeral home to come and get the body, because generally they take the body right then. So they had never dealt with this before, so staff brought out a privacy curtain. Patients were not allowed in that area. Security moved the body into a hall for privacy at 4:44. And luckily, as a result of this unfortunate accident, the hospital has now acquired a gurney and body bags. So if a similar event occurs in the future, hospital staff can move the body immediately following the police investigation. Now, the other thing to bear in mind on ATPC or that other unit, when a person was assaulted and murdered in the hall, when they were trying to move the body and clean up, you're not allowed to do that when there's a murder. So I think that they've clarified what to do if someone dies, what to do if the coroner declines to come get the body, what they're going to do. So that did drive new policies. And as we discussed, hopefully there won't be another sentinel event like this where this has to be utilized. Hopefully this was an isolated incident. So it was a teachable moment, so I'm always glad for those. They told us what NBCR was. It was nonviolent crisis intervention. Someone just typed wrong. As far as when the HIPAA breach was that occurred in November 23rd, 2021, the parents weren't notified for almost 2 months, and then they were notified to contact the credit checking agencies and put a lock. They said they're in accordance with, and they state the statute that notification of a breach has to be issued no later than 60 calendar days after discovery. So it was just under 60 days. It was about 56 days or so, 54 days. So they were under the policy where they had to do it. Let me see other things that ASH administration has told me as far as their update. The other thing I wanted to make you aware of, on the patient that committed suicide on the civil campus, not the one on forensic, but on the civil campus where he ate food that was inappropriate, that was not on his dietary restricted diet, ASH Access came back with that they found issues regarding the review and actions by ASH as follows. So they did give them recommendations of things to implement. So they did give them things that they have to do as far as with the diets and making sure that people that are on restricted diets don't have access to foods that they shouldn't.
Lori, who gave that guidance? I missed that part.
What was that?
Who gave the guidance?
It was Access.
Access. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. So there were quite a few things that they asked them to look at. They need to make sure that medical equipment has the right equipment, it's functioning in good order. They have to review their policies and procedures, revise as necessary to ensure they're current regarding inspection, repair, replacement. They need to inspect their surveillance equipment and cameras to ensure they're functioning in good working order. They need to ensure all staff knows CPR and basic life support. So they have all of these situations. Let's see where we are in the agenda. Okay. As far as, like, we talked about this retaliation and staffing, I think they've given us staffing information, retaliation issues. Alice will help me go through those notes to see if we can see something in there. Timely medical care. There have been patients that have had problems getting medical care for things that need medical care. I'm happy to report one patient is getting a needed procedure that has been delayed through COVID, so that's good. So I'm happy that the medical care is provided. That being said, I can tell you that there were two AWOL attempts while getting patients medical care. So, you know, they're always balancing, do they really need this? Don't they need this? And just last month, there were two AWOL attempts, which we'll go through when I read the information. Let's see. Admin separation concerns. Again, we still, you know, we still have never gotten sufficient photos or dimensions. I mean, they've said it's two rooms, two baths, and a hall, which for those of us that have looked at a certain YouTube from a patient that has uploaded those, it doesn't look like as big of an area. So we're still not thoroughly satisfied. We'd like to see dimensions, but not of the whole campus, just of the separation area. Any thoughts from the committee? And Melissa, our architect, I know.
Well, this is Dee, and you know, I've said repeatedly after seeing the videos, we know that the information they're providing is most likely not correct, and I do think it needs to be pursued personally myself.
Do we want a motion again to see if we can get just dimensions of the room to ask if the doors are unlocked? Is it one room you're locked in, or is it two rooms and a hall and two bathrooms? Which is
like, this is the patient K. I've seen the seclusion room, and there is a small hallway that's separated from the bathroom. The door is locked. They have to call security to get that door opened, I believe. I wouldn't want to be in that room. It seems pretty small to me, but that's my opinion.
And Kay, it's different than the seclusion room. This is not seclusion where they have it on every unit, where if someone is having crisis, they bring them. It's the admin separation room.
That's the administrative separation room and seclusion room are, I think, synonymous.
Well,
I haven't seen an ADSEG room, if that's what you're asking. Yeah. There is another room. There's a seclusion room that they're using as an ADSEG room. Administrative segregation.
This is actually an administrative separation. It's in the administrative code, and it's defined differently than seclusion.
Okay.
So I have two things, Lori. Yeah, if we could get dimensions, or if it's easier for them to let us go see it. But the other problem is, there's nothing in the administrative code that defines or describes what the physical requirements have to be. They have not provided that either. It's not in the code. And so that's a gray area. Seclusion, right, is defined very specifically.
So do I hear a motion coming out of that, Melissa?
Yes, I motion. to request from ASH either dimensions or a visit to the to administrative separation specifically, and also if they could point us to where in the administrative code the actual physical requirements are.
Alice seconds that, and I would personally really like to be able to go in person and see this current situation, because there's a lot of damaging effects just within the first week to a person's brain and mental health, and it's been proven in multiple studies over many years. So
we agree. So all in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay.
Hey, Lori, is that also, was that also two different units? So that was the forensic side and then also the ACPTC?
No.
I misunderstood.
That's forensic. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Let's see. The other ASH administration update. So there are some good things going on. One, they had just had the APTCT. Or whatever it is, forum today. They told me that none of the units on forensic or civil are on COVID restriction any longer. Mm-hmm. They said that community spread is low enough, and there have been loosening of the restrictions from Department of Health on what they had to adhere to start visits again. So they're planning to open to start outings as early as next week. Now, due to staffing, it may be limit the number that they can do, but they will be starting, barring no other, something else comes up. But I thought that was good news that finally we'll get patient visits again, and not patient visits, patient outings again. And also, based on some feedback that we had heard in meetings, I asked administration, I provided them the name of the person on the phone of someone that was attending and sitting in on IOC meetings, that all staff are not to attend the meeting with the patients or when they're in IOC meetings or discussions. Now, that being said, you know, we have to be reasonable. If, let's say, a unit is in a conference room and something breaks out, or then they're going to go in. But we're saying under normal circumstances, no one should be listening to their conversations with the IOC. And they agree.
Okay, perfect. I'll go ahead and let that patient know that that's the case. Thank you.
Okay. And let's see, as far as the next thing on our agenda, which we just went over, COVID status, overview of incident and accidents, then we'll go on to Melissa so I can stop talking. I had the first one, Natalie, is 2022-0018, and it was unwitnessed, unusual, during just normal viewing of a dorm room, the behavioral health staff reported they found a person on the floor during their census, and the person was on the floor with blood surrounding their head. They called a medical alert, and they called 911, called the doctor, and got the ER packet ready. The bleeding was controlled by direct pressure. There was a wound. Vitals were taken, heart rate, respirations, pulse oximetry, all remained stable. The patient was blinking repeatedly, silent and nonverbal, but they did squeeze the hand of the nurse, and they were taken off to Valleywise. So I asked if they knew, if this was an attempted suicide, or was this a fall, or do they know what happened? and they don't because, you know, cameras aren't in the dorm rooms or the bedrooms. They said that they're not sure what has happened. The person in question has had self-harm behaviors in the past. I asked about the condition of the patient, and the patient is doing well. So that was the first one. Second one, I just saw a pattern that was perplexing to me. So I had, you know, every month on the civil side, you have a lot of assaults, whether it's on peer on peer or peer on staff. And what I was noticing is that the incident didn't seem to correlate with when a code was called or not, which was perplexing to me. So on 2022-0020, a patient was sitting in the day room when another one got up and swung and hit someone. No code was called. Then I go on to another one, 2022-0055, and a patient was in the day room again and observed attacking his peer. They called the code and they went into seclusion. The other one, they just redirected the person to go back to their room or to seclusion or take a peer. And this one was put in a hold, escorted to seclusion. Let's see. Here's one also, 2022-0091. Patient was in the day room when someone walked up without provocation, punched them in the shoulder. They staff intervened and just walked them apart. No code gray was called. Next one is 2022-0113. It was assault, and it was a patient trying to assault peers, and there was a timely intervention from staff, which prevented them from hitting a second patient. The patient continued to be agitated, complained. They were aggressive, agitated, non-compliant with direction. So they did. The patient then ended up punching the staff in the face, and they did call a code gray.
Does it sound like if there was just one incident of hit, that there was not a code gray called, and if it was like an ongoing attack, they called a code gray?
It wasn't always clear. That's why I was perplexed why sometimes and why not others. I mean, we have another one. Let me see. This one is 2022-0117, and they were escorting a patient to the cafe and bank, and the patient punched another patient in the face. They moved them apart, but no code. So no code gray that I could see. But the police were called from the patient. But, you know, they're not tied together. You can have the police called and no code gray, no police. Those two aren't tied together. But I did ask about that. I asked why it seemed, and they said it depends on the staff that's on the unit at the time. It depends on the history of the patient, if they know if the patient will tend to continue to escalate or not. They never tell staff that they cannot call a code gray, but they leave it to the discretion of the working staff when to call a code gray. So I was able to find that out. Here's another one, 2022-0166. Staff heard screams in the hallway from a bedroom. They opened the door. They saw a patient laying in the bed and the roommate on top of the patient, choking the patient with hands around the neck. Code gray was called, and the patient was taken to seclusion, all that. My question to them was you didn't say if you separated those roommates. I hope so. And they said, yeah, they did. I said, it'd be nice if you noted that. So that was, they did do it. They just didn't document that they did it. Next one, 2022-0182, an AWOL attempt. So a transport personnel called a code green, which is AWOL, from Valleywise when a patient had just taken off on foot from the transportation vehicle. They were able to track the person down, get them back with PD officers and ASH grounds officer. They were able to get the patient back. They found them.
Stop.
So that was, and then there was a second one, 2022-0266, and there was an AWOL attempt. Let me see something. I was seeing if it was the same patient ID, but it's not. So a second AWOL attempt, again, ground transport, and another patient was escorting a patient to Valleywise for their appointment. After the appointment, walking out the front of Valleywise, the patient went AWOL, ran, and they were again able to get the patient back. And, you know, that's just why they always weigh carefully if they're going to take someone off ground. They said if someone has a history of attempting to run, then from that point on, when they go out until further notice, they'll probably have those restraints on so they can't run. But to me, that makes sense if they've tried to run. Let me see why I did this one. Let me see if there's any others of note. Another one that was unusual, ASH 2022-0297. This one was, it had to do with a housekeeper and a cleaning cart and a peer, and somehow it accidentally bumped a patient with a mop. And then it had to do with the mop, but what happened, a patient attempted to call the police after being assaulted by so-and-so in a separate incident. So they wanted to call the police because of an assault on their person. And the RN dialed the operator on the patient line, let the operator know it was okay to put the call through as it was the patient's right to call the operator. The operator said closed and hung up on the RN. The RN called the operator from the nurse's station to let her know it was okay to put the call through and call 911. The RN said it's not an emergency, but for the non-emergent line, the rider was told 911 still needed to be called, and the RN stated she'd never heard of this and hung up before clarification. It didn't sound correct to her. So I was asking if there was follow-up. And there was. Security was notified of the occurrence with the operator to make sure that people are trained on policies and procedures. That's all of the ones. Like, again, there's always many, many incidents on the civil side, rarely or very few on the forensic. So do you want to go and give a report on our virtual visits, Melissa?
Sure. So our first visit, the first concern had to do with the patient not being sure if there was a not understanding it, if there was a detective sent to see them. But then that conversation sort of stopped on that. So I'm not really sure where that landed. but there was some confusion about whether or not a detective was sent to see specifically the patient. But the other concern really had to do with some of what we've talked about.
Stop it, Oscar. No. Later. Oh, sorry.
Oh, no, that's okay. I was.
I thought I was muted.
I thought you were making a comment. The second concern had to do with when all the units were on lockdown for COVID and quarantined, there was concern at the time about following protocols, being restricted, restricted use of certain rooms and bathrooms. And that I think some of the protocols, again, it was this person's concern that it's their impression that the protocols were being followed for a few days, but then there was a lot of intermingling without masks, people on the in the dining room and the day room. And then a few days later, a lot more people had gotten COVID. And so, again, there were concerns about just following protocols for COVID. Another concern had to do with, so the good news was this person got their full mall privileges back, which was good, but they were also hoping to get their job back. And this is interesting because they talked about tests that were being given, asking questions like what's the highest level of education you've had, what jobs have you had in the past, is there anything that would hamper you from doing simple tasks. I guess that there was some kind of tests given with leather and like you follow steps, and so like we had a question about who's requiring the vocational rehab. And let me see, hold on. So some of the other concerns regarding, so there was concern about, being able to get the vocational rehab, getting a job back. And there was another concern that had to do with like the Stop and Shop. And this person was advocating for getting more help, right? To show them and other patients really, really, like how to use a bank, right? How to follow up on proper hygiene, how to do your finances. Part of that was also discussing the fact that not only are those like life skills and things you need to do, but it also helps quite a bit with different anxieties and fears. Let's see, I think we asked if they were going to get a job at some time. And this individual, this person, unfortunately, sleeps in because of the medication. And so there is some, as you can imagine, a lot of the afternoon slots are full. So it's kind of hard for everybody to get access to jobs, especially when it seems like there's more availability, in the morning than there is in the afternoon. There was also some other concern about being asked to provide some feedback, but some concern and maybe perception that the treatment team is taking advantage of when this person's speaking their mind. And is that, impacting any kind of loss of levels or jobs? Then there was, then we had a discussion about, and this, Lori, I might need your help on this too, like the clarification of when a patient has a family member or guardian given any kind of power of attorney, and when that input is given either by that family member, Or when actually the hospital, does the hospital necessarily have to update the family member when they're given power of attorney?
I think it was what I have learned, even if someone has guardianship or power of attorney, generally the hospital can, they'll notify you after an event or after the fact, and they'll notify you of med changes, but they don't have to do it before and get permission. If you're in the state hospital, that kind of trumps asking for permission on meds and stuff like it would in the community, what I understand.
Okay.
And the other thing that someone brought up was, again, timely medical care.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 This person woke up like there was some blood on their pillow when they woke up. But they weren't sent to the doctor. And so that was definitely a concern. So the second visit, the first issue was talking about, this was, kind of a good thing. There were visitors on the patio, and there was also, dog visit, I guess, too. So the question for this patient was, why can't this patient service dog visit? And, they have been trying to get, get their dog in the unit for a while. And so that was a question they had. So if other dogs can visit, right, why can't their dog visit? And then in addition to that, there's also the second part of that is trying to see if there's any way possible for the dog to live with them too, because it is a service dog. And can any kind of reasonable accommodations be made? So that's a concern. And I know we also talked, I don't think Ashley's on the phone, but talking with us some more. Another concern was the fact that because of this person's diagnosis, Ash cannot really provide the treatment services. And I guess it's taken like 2 years to come to that conclusion that they can't provide the treatment that's required for this person. And so do they need to send them somewhere else? Now, I think the good news that the patient mentioned was that they are going to another unit, which I guess is like a pre-CRU unit. And I think that they were, happy about that pending move. Did you have anything else for that visit, Lori?
No, I think that wraps that up.
Okay. So then the next visit, it was more of a discussion. And, we had mentioned that the forum was canceled for the civil side. Mm-hmm. And so the patient wasn't sure why, because, visitors were going on site. So, we didn't know if perhaps civil was different than the forensic side. And that just might be that. Then the patient also brought up what Lori talked about, which was staff sitting in on IOC meetings, right? And other patients felt that they weren't free to speak. And then, let's see, good thing is this person might be getting a conditional release soon, so that would be really good. And then the last visit didn't have, we were going to have another visit, but that patient wasn't feeling good, so didn't come to talk with us, but hopefully they're at the meeting today.
I think that was a good summary of our visits. So with that, does anyone on the committee have any new business they want to speak to before we do public comment and then adjourn to executive to vote on a new member? Any new business? Okay, with none being heard, let's go ahead, public comment, and again, remember that during public comment, it was requested that I remind everyone that we're not allowed to respond to public comment. If we ever come to a point where anyone from ASH administration comes, they can't respond to people speaking in public comment. So bear that in mind, that it's just a one-way conversation. We'll remind, and I'll only jump in if someone is using someone's name to access instead of just talking about a situation or talking about just their own individual treatment. I might jump in, but I just wanted that being said.
Hi, this is Kay, actually commenting as a public speaker. I actually pulled my incident reports, and I was actually really surprised to see that they are actually writing IRs on patients who are discussing any type of legal matters that involve the hospital, and then they're writing incident reports based on that. So I don't know why the hospital is doing this, and I'm actually kind of curious if we can actually question the hospital as to why they feel it warrants writing an incident report to discuss legal matters amongst patients. I actually had two of those written up, actually, by the way, out of four.
Okay. So.
Wait, I'm sorry. Just to clarify for the notes, because this is a unique situation, do I state that, do you want your name in the public comment section?
Sure.
Are you
stating that? Yes.
Okay, as a member, you can discuss it, and we can speak with you because you're a member of the committee. If you're asking generally, if talking legally with other patients is an offense that warrants a write-up.
That's what they're doing.
Okay, so do you want a motion to ask why people are getting written up if they're just talking with others about legal defenses and legal matters?
Yes. So do I just say I motion to ask the hospital why they're writing incident reports on legal matters discussed between patients?
Okay. Do I hear a second?
Sorry.
Dee, I see you're trying to speak. Are you seconding?
Sure, I'll second that, but I had one comment about the incident reports. The incident reports are, quote unquote, not a legal part of the patient's record. It is simply for the hospital to use. And Alice, you can confirm or deny this, but incident reports are not supposed to be a formal part of the patient's record.
I've heard two other patients.
They're more of a learning. They're more of us to learn from it so that we can hopefully implement policy change or make sure things were done correctly and prevent things from happening in the future.
Well, they're not even allowed to be used in a legal sense. If somebody requests somebody's chart, say an attorney, they don't even get those incident reports when they do that. That's just an FYI.
Okay, my understanding is that they are actually given to the PSRB so that they can review them, because the incident reports can include, as we've reviewed some of them, like acts of violence, you know, the code grays, all of those types of things. And so incident reports are generally frowned upon with patients, is my feeling. I haven't gone before the PSRB yet, but I've heard that they can be used basically against you in the PSRB hearings.
I'm not saying that that's not what they're doing. I'm telling you what happens in other hospitals and what they're used for. And I think that Alice just verified that as well.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's what I was saying. Can you guys hear me? Mm-hmm. It's kind of it's more of a learning thing. We go through with the IR, and then each person puts in their part, and we make sure that everything was done correctly related to the incident. It's sent to administration, usually like the DON and other people, and somewhat investigated, because they want to make sure that there was no mistakes made, and that if something could be improved upon in the future, that it will be. It's not
that's
really
the way it's supposed to be. It's not supposed to be used in that sense. So I don't know what's going on there, is basically what I was trying to say, Kay.
Okay. I just know that they had written two incident reports, basically because they had overheard or directly spoke to me about possible legal actions against the hospital.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Back to public comment. And just for time's sake, we limit everyone 3 minutes each. When you speak, let us know whether you want your name in the minutes or not. If you don't, we'll just have it as anonymous.
Hello. I'm not going to say my name. I have known very well how things go around here, and you can become very flammable if you don't just lay down and take everything, and I mean everything from pointing out little things that aren't. But I actually want to go ahead and turn it over for someone to speak, because two other gentlemen with me, we've been writing down and we've had a few things go on, but I'm gonna pass it over to another person.
Good evening, everybody. I'm glad that we could have this meeting today. This is Robert Dunn. One thing that is a major concern for us is today we were told that unit guidelines have precedence over patient rights. Is that true, or?
Well, we can't ask the question, but we can bring this up.
Yeah, and if so, why? Why is unit guidelines have a precedence over, patient rights?
Hi, this is Timber Briscoe on, what unit is this? Finion. How you doing? Hello?
Hi, Tim. Remember, we can't respond.
Oh, I was just saying, I didn't know if you were there. This is Tim from Pinion. I'm on the 4-month shuffle, and I feel that is retaliation by the executive management team, which includes the CEO, CMO, and CFO, and CNO. All the CEOs, whatever, because every 4 months I get to be transferred to another unit and acclimate with 20 other people's quirks and dings and ticks and stuff. And the reason why they said it was to find myself and to get in touch with myself. I know where I'm at, and I can feel myself, so. The medical issues, they're slowly but surely being taken care of. It's only taken 3 months, or 3 years, 2 weeks, and 3 days. On the second Tuesday of March, I have surgery for the first part. Mail, some of us have a lot of problems sending and receiving our mail. Also, it sometimes never ends up showing up to me or to them. mail being opened when received, or the unit receiving mail open or not giving it to the patient.
Contents missing.
Contents missing out of the mail.
Right now, I'll just jump in for a second. I particularly have an investigation in-house here and with the postal service currently going, just so you know, there's somebody who it's going, but that happened to me, so I'm one witness. Go ahead.
And food visits. We would like to know when they're going to bring back the food visits, because they're allowing in-person visits, so the COVID isn't going to come in on the food. That's not common sense. So I guess that's my time, but if you could check into the food visits thing, and could you please give me a call, or do I have to go through Jackie? I can't remember. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
Hi, my name is Isaac Contreras. Can I speak?
Welcome, Isaac. Do you want your name in the minutes?
Yes, I do. I do want my name in the minutes.
Go ahead, Isaac.
Okay.
It's been a while since we talked to you.
I know it has been a while. It's been a bit of a rough situation. I mean, I'm still in seclusion, and they basically say I'm still a danger. I'm a threat. They say I'm like the worst of the worst, yet I haven't had a cold gray. Now, the IRs that they write, they're never accurate and they're never right. I used to have the problem with them saying that, you know, that the video sees what I'm doing, but it can't hear. Well, I was able to provide my lawyers, Holly Jizzle and Josh Mozell, with copies of tons of audios that has to do with things that they allege that the reasons of why I did things, which is, I don't know, I mean, it's just, well, sorry about that, but yeah, yeah, so I've given them the audios, they've heard it. I've got Dr. Morris on there. I have a lot of people on there, and it just contradicts what they say that happened in the video. Now, I mean, things are going better for me, thanks to my attorneys, thanks to Holly and Josh. Things are actually, I mean, going better in a sense. I mean, I'm still in seclusion. For some reason, Dr. Bowen and Dr. Woods think they're above the law. And I'm not understanding how these people are allowed to abuse us like this. This is abuse. I mean, you don't put a human in a cage. You don't take a human's rights away. They don't even do that in prison. So why do we have to do that? Like, why, like, do they hold back our mail? That's one thing I have an issue with, too, is my mail. They've been withholding it. I've ordered from the store that they told me to, and they haven't given me anything. I mean, in reality, again, thanks to Josh and Holly, things are better for me, but it's still the day-to-day struggle of being in seclusion. I mean, I've been in here for 2 years and I haven't even had a cold gray. I haven't even had a cold gray. So my thing is, how are these people permitted to treat us the way they do? I mean, under what authority are they given permission to abuse us? Because that's abuse. And most of us come from being abused as growing up. So to get the same abuse here instead of treatment, it's hard. And that's my 3 minutes. And I want to thank Josh and Holly for being a big support and really helping me out. I got the case pending with the hospital. And hopefully, finally, some justice will get done. Thank you.
Thank you, Isaac.
My name is Charles Ed Mark. I am with the Arizona State Hospital Civil and Forensic Chaplain Search Team. We are still searching. We would love any input or attendance at future team meetings. As you all remember, I'm requesting and the team members a bilingual Catholic chaplain. And I have a P.O. box you can write me to, or two phone numbers. The phone numbers are 970-305-5055. And the other number is 928-351-7679. Leave as long a message as you all would like. Currently, they're going to my voicemail. Also, I have a P.O. box, 2481 Mesa, Arizona, 85214. We really appreciate everybody's prayers and meditation on finding the second chaplain. Contact me anytime, or we have other people on the team. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Charles. Do we have anyone else from the public? If not, we can adjourn to executive session where we can vote, discuss and vote.
Excuse me. I just have one thing to say. I know I'm out of turn, but I just want to thank you guys. I really do want to thank the IOC for giving us a voice. Thanks to you guys, I was able to find my attorneys, and you guys have helped out a lot. You guys have been a big part, a big help to this. And I thank you guys, you know, for not giving up on us and keeping on helping us. And I just wanted to tell you guys that my name is Isaac Contreras, and like, it is appreciated, and we do look always forward to these. Thank you.
Hi, I'm speaking on behalf of the patient. They wanted to make the statement that ROUs are basically illegal, and that the hospital is, ROU stands for restricted on unit. And this person just wanted us to let us all know that that's actually illegal. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what this person is saying.
Okay, thank you. So,
this is Timber Briscoe again. Sorry. I would like to thank you guys. If Holly or Josh are out there, could you please contact Timber Briscoe on Pinion? Patient number is 29524. 29524. Thank you.
And this is an anonymous patient. I choose to keep that way because of all the years that I've seen retaliation and things like that. But I tell you, you know, I work on my treatment. I get the best I can out of what I can. And I just want to thank you guys that support us and keep an eagle eye out for our well-being. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. If we don't have any more people from the public, we'll go ahead and adjourn to executive session. Now, Larry, how do we include Kay?
I'm still present.
Okay. But we can't have other people that are non.
They're leaving right now.
Okay.
Okay.
Lori, did you motion to adjourn? I'll second to adjourn.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, all in favor?
I'll stop the recording now, Lori.
Okay.